We're back on In Focus News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples. We're chatting here today with our folks from Ascension Via Christi. Hospital President and CEO Bob Koppel is here with a couple of nurses. Melanie Hastert and Natasha Duncan are joining us here today. And we were talking here during the break a little bit about just kind of what the nurses are seeing firsthand. And, you know, it's not a pleasant experience, I'm sure. And it's been tough, as we've heard that relayed here this morning. You know, I got to imagine for the patients themselves, it's never a pleasant experience going to the hospital. And maybe Natasha, if you want to talk about this a little bit, you know, what do you hear from patients? Because part of your jobs as a nurse is not only to treat the patients, but really to provide that care here for folks.
Yeah, so when you come to the hospital with COVID and you're admitted for an inpatient stay, you're isolated. You are isolated from everybody. And the only people that come into your room are your doctors and your nurses and your CNAs. And your respiratory therapists. No other family or staff come into that room. A lot of times if other staff members have to communicate with the patient, they call them on the phone. Families are not allowed to come in and visit COVID patients unless it is an end-of-life situation. So a lot of phone calls and video calls happen at that point as well. So you're basically, I hate to say it, but you're basically kind of in prison. It's very, very isolating, and it's just you and your thoughts, basically, and whoever comes into the room or calls you. It can turn into a very depressing situation, and I'm sure it has had quite an effect on these people's mental health as far as depression and anxiety go. I have seen where patients come into the ICU and they just kind of turn delirious because of everything that is happening around them, the alarms, the wires, the cords, the isolation. And it can be a very traumatic experience mentally, as well as, you know, physically and emotionally. So these people that come in, they're not only dealing with a severe illness, they're also dealing with having to be alone without their loved ones as well.
Yeah, that's really tough. And it's not just older individuals. I know we're seeing more of an influx lately of folks in their 30s to 60s, really, if I remember right.
We are. I think the big thing to remember there as well is, you know, when you get to be retirement age, you do worry about who your decision maker is going to be for healthcare decisions, financial decisions. But that has been hard conversations for us to have as well. Talking to, you know, a 20, 30, 40 year old on who's your decision maker when we put you on a ventilator and you cannot communicate and advocate for yourself. And those conversations are not being had. I guess that would be the other advice that I would give to people is know who your decision maker is. Get a power of attorney for healthcare. Talk to them about what you would want if you end up in the ICU on the ventilator. My husband and I have had that talk. It's not an easy one to have, but it's very important that your family and your decision maker or your decision maker know what you would want. You know, would you want a trach? Would you want a feeding tube? That is also important. That's just as important as getting a vaccine and wearing a mask.
Yeah. And that's not just COVID advice. That's good life advice for anybody listening here today. To have that, have a will in place, you know, God forbid you're, because any of us can die anytime. So that's just a real good advice, I think, for people to hear this morning. Moving on this topic, we've seen the cases go up. We've seen them go down. I was looking, I think yesterday at our hospitalization numbers over the last 4 months and the amount of folks in the ICU and, you know, it's not a high number per se. I guess when you look at it, I mean, single digit numbers here. I think it's 7 right now, and and three, if I remember right, were in the ICU as of Wednesday. It fluctuates, I know, from day to day. But we hear so much from folks in the community. They hear those numbers and it's like, well, it's not that bad. Can you kind of explain kind of for our listeners, you know, why you don't want to see those numbers go up and down, or go up, I should say?
Well, A, that's our community. I mean, we want them to be healthy. We want them to be well. I think the biggest thing is knowing that, you know, a COVID ICU hospital stay is not short. We have had some people for 60 plus days in the ICU on a ventilator. That is a long time. Naturally, complications come with all of that. So when you just see it's one or two, you know, due to privacy regulations, we're not able to share if it's the same patient or a different patient, but these patients are spending a long time in the ICU with us. That's a long time away from family and friends. It is definitely a hardship for these patients and for the families.
And Bob
and Brandon, just so you know, today we actually have 11 positives in the hospital. So we had 7 yesterday. We have 11 today and the PUI. So, I mean, I do think concern for us, we have started to see yet another ramp up across the state. And I think we're all waiting to see if we're beginning another ramp up here locally now, because that's actually a big jump in one day.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and it's interesting. What is about the average time of stay? Do you guys keep that kind of data, Bob?
So if somebody's up on the floor, just on the medical unit, it's typically been a week-ish. So 6 to 8 days, maybe 9 days. If they're in the ICU, it's usually now we're talking about at least a week just in the ICU, if not 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or more weeks just in the ICU, then potentially a stay on the medical unit. And for these patients that have been in the ICU for 3 or 4 weeks, it kind of depending on where they're going from here. A lot of them are going to long-term acute care hospitals. It's called an LTAC. These patients are typically have had a trach and PEG, and they may be at the LTAC another couple of months. And that's assuming there's no complications. And once the patients get out of the LTAC, there's a number of them have then had to go to rehab facilities because their bodies are just in disarray at that point. Have no muscle build. I mean, you're really in some many cases teaching people to walk again, and so for some of and for some folks, I mean, these are folks from Riley County. Their COVID process for some of them has been 4 to 6 months in some sort of hospital or institution for support. And I think we can't also discount there's the other piece of this, and that is those who are fatalities. And we're approaching 60 just for Riley County. You know, we've got similar fatality counts for Gary County, for Pottawatomie County, all of our neighboring areas that we help serve. I mean, that is also just our reality. You know, this morning, again, we have another OB patient who's positive. This is such a high risk situation for both the infant and for the mother. And we've not particularly had issues in our region, but other parts of the country, just some horror, tragic stories where we've lost moms and we've lost infants all over the country now because of COVID. So, yeah, again, we would always encourage people, like Melanie and Tasha said, hand washing is important, masking is important, vaccinations are important, social distancing is important. I know it's perhaps politically unpopular, but from a health perspective, and you know, to Melanie's point, we don't really care about anybody's politics. That is not part of the nursing or physician assessment. This is about healthcare. And I think sometimes we've got to pull people back to that. This is about healthcare. And we'll deal with the politics some other day, some other time.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, and one thing, we're getting a little on time here, but when you mentioned the hospital stays, and you said you had 11 in the hospital right now, and that's all COVID patients, that doesn't account for if there's folks in the hospital for other things. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. So we have actually 7 total ICU patients. 3 of them are COVID. We have 45 patients up on the third floor. 11 of those are positive and 1 PUI. So I think that's the other perspective too, to help people with, because there's big concerns about capacity, you know, across the entire healthcare continuum. And in our case, you know, we've got 25%+ of our hospital capacity currently being utilized with COVID patients. And that's the same story in Topeka, in Kansas City, in Salina, and Wichita. I mean, and even a number of our critical access hospital partners, they are have, you know, 20-25% of their resources are just being expended now to take care of COVID patients.
Wow. That's insane. I wish that could be communicated better at the state level, you know, because I don't think that's being communicated very well at this point. We got a caller here. Dave's fielding a call here. Nope, we don't have a caller. Okay. Well, I just...
Here's Dave Lewis was calling in.
Dave Lewis is what?
He said you were calling in here.
Oh, right, but... no. Did have one question from a caller earlier. Wanted to know if you have an idea on what the overall cost of, you know, the whole COVID mess is, you know, tallying up. Lots, right?
Do you have, I think you
can
might
you hear me.
Yeah, I think you heard. Did you? Can you hear that question there?
We couldn't hear anything, Brandon.
Okay, he was basically had a caller asking a question earlier that they were wanting to know what the cost is tallying up here. I don't know specifically for the hospital.
Or... You know, it all of course all depends on how long somebody's here, and also you know just what all is going on and what's being done for them. For most of the patients up on the med, like you just have a medical unit stay. I mean, easily $50,000 to $100,000 bill. If you go to the ICU, depending on how long you're with us, it probably it can be $250,000 to $1 million bill. This is a very expensive, resource intensive. The medications are incredibly expensive that we're given to folks, and those medications are helpful, and they're helping save people, and that's why we're doing this. But it is not cheap.
I want to close here. I know you wanted to share one quick thing here before we go about testing.
We just really encourage people, if they're concerned, if they've been exposed, certainly get tested. But we really need people to go to the testing centers in town. And we're starting to have people come to the emergency department just to get tested, just to get swabbed. And it's just an inappropriate use of that resource. And also, it's incredibly expensive for patients to do that. You don't have an emergency room visit, most likely it's close to $1,000 just to start. And so we would really encourage people to take advantage of the free testing that the county offers. And they've got, you know, sites for that. Go on the county, Riley County Health Department or Pottawatomie County Health Department or Gary County Health Department websites. You can see that or call them. You can get scheduled. And again, a number of the pharmacies are also still doing testing. So we just encourage people to, it's going to be much, quite honestly, it's going to be much faster for you as a patient. You're going to get in and out a lot easier. And we'll allow, like, for example, in our emergency department, we're using those resources to take care of people with emergent health needs. And we're not delaying that care for those patients because of people wanting to get swabbed because of an exposure. So just really encourage people to use that appropriate venue to get that health care done.
All right. Very good. Bob, thank you again, and want to say thanks to Melanie Hastert and Natasha Duncan for being here today, and thank you for sharing your firsthand accounts here of what it's been like.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Brandon.
You bet. That's going to wrap up our first half of the program. Stay tuned. We'll hear from Karen Hibbard from Manhattan Convention and Visitors Bureau up next.